That's fine. All right. All right, good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 9:30. The date is Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Wayne Williams, Glenn Roper, Assistant Solicitor General on behalf of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman, and Sharon Gallant. Sharon Eubanks from Designee of Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services. Every person on my script is the wrong person. Today we are meeting to consider title setting for nine measures. No, he doesn't do my script. It's from last time. There are two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of a question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on this floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40-106.5 of the Colorado Revised Statute. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Please take note we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the titles and summaries themselves. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. The first item on the agenda is a rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-2016 number 87, fiscal impact statements for initiated measures. If the proponents could come forward and identify yourselves and just state for the record if you're present.
Good morning, my name is...
Could you go to the microphone, sorry.
Good morning, my name is Peter Moore.
Good morning, Robert Golden.
And we have a motion for a rehearing on this matter. If the petitioner for rehearing could come forward and identify yourself.
Hi, my name is Dennis Pohill, and I filed the petition for rehearing.
Okay, and it looks like your petition is essentially based on containing multiple subjects and failing to express with clarity the subject of the measures. Is that right?
Yes.
Is there anything you wish to add to that?
No, that'll do it.
Okay. Then the proponents have anything they wish to add?
Elizabeth Titus on behalf of the proponents. I submitted a short response to Mr. Pohill's motion, just stating the standard for motions required under CRS 1-40-107-1B. And because Mr. Pohill's motion does not set forth with particularity the grounds for rehearing, he did not include a short plain statement for the reasons for his claim that it violated the single subject rule or identify any specific wording challenged in the title, that I don't think his motion meets the standard required by the statute and should therefore be denied.
All right, anybody on the board have any questions for either? Anyone have any discussion on Ms. Titus's response?
I would note that on March 11th, Mr. Pohill sent an email providing more detail as to his concerns. I don't know if Ms. Titus has seen a copy of that.
I have seen a copy. I don't think that the detail suffices either, and I don't think that the board should consider his March 11th submission as it was past the deadline to submit the motion for a rehearing. The statute doesn't provide for the opportunity to supplement or otherwise provide a reply. It says that within 7 days, the proponent must provide a petition or a motion that sets forth the grounds, and Mr. Pohill did not do that.
Mr. Pohill, do you want to respond to that at all?
The section of statute 107 that Ms. Titus is referring to is not going to affect until March 25th, I believe it is. And I pointed that out in the email that I sent to Steve. So this discussion is really irrelevant.
Mr. Pohill, have you looked at the provision that is in force currently up until March 26th?
Yes.
Looking at that provision that is effective, it seems to me to contain some of the same, you know, basically the same standard that Ms. Titus refers to. Do you disagree with that reading of the statute that is currently in force?
No, I don't know.
I'm personally inclined to allow it. He made his request within the time period, and commonly, even though it's not a formal supplement to the record, I think that, you know, we allow people to come in and state anything new that they want to argue on their motion. It becomes a back and forth where people are bringing up new issues and new questions as we go through the rehearing process, and so I don't really see where you have to allege everything in the initial submission for rehearing. And although he doesn't point out particular words, he does state two grounds. So I'm inclined to go ahead and hear it and find that we have jurisdiction to proceed with the rehearing, but I don't know where anyone else is.
And in terms of the statutory requirements in 1-40-107, although that statute was amended last session to make some changes that are applicable just to petitions, initiatives that are filed later this month in terms of in the new cycle, the requirements for the motion for rehearing was pre-existing law. I mean, those weren't affected by last year's bill.
Right.
So those requirements exist. I do agree with Ms. Dare that it has been the practice of the title board to accept motions for rehearing, even though they're very brief, such as the one before us now, and so that I would go ahead and deal with the motion for rehearing on its merits.
Do we want to do that by formal motion, or do you want to? I think we don't need to.
I don't think we need
to. Okay. All right. Then we'll go ahead and proceed. So the first issue is single subject. Anyone on the board have anything, any questions for either side on that? Or did either side want to supplement their arguments regarding the single subject?
Right. And I still believe that the measure contains a single subject, and so I'm not persuaded by Mr. Pohill's motion for rehearing on that ground.
And I feel the same way.
All right. Then let's pull up the question. Mr. Pohill, did you have anything specific about the language of the question, the statement that you object to?
No, I didn't put any effort into trying to draft a title myself.
Well, even without putting effort into drafting a title yourself, is there any particular phrase or word?
I did try to provide more specifics, which was included in my email to Steve. So hopefully you got copies of that.
Okay. Nothing else? All right. Any questions?
I don't think I have any questions. I think the email raises a number of questions that could probably be properly be considered by voters in deciding whether or not to vote for the initiative. But most of what he says here, I don't think is or doesn't raise any concerns with me about the title as designated to respond to a couple of specific ones. He says nonpartisan is a loaded, biased term. I'm not sure I agree with that, and I'm comfortable retaining the word nonpartisan in the title. And then the last portion of his email says the title does not state that it doesn't apply to referred measures. And it doesn't specifically say that, but the language of the title, as we set last time, does indicate that it is for initiated ballot measures. So I'm comfortable that there's not a concern about needing to specifically say it applies to or doesn't apply to referred measures. And then none of the other points he raised were concerning to me about the title as previously approved.
I'm in agreement with those comments by Mr. Roper.
Okay. Did you want to make a motion?
Sure, if we're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 87.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously, which takes us to agenda item 2015-2016, number 98, primary elections. And if the proponents could come forward. Just identify yourself and state that your proponents are present.
Jason Dunn on behalf of the proponents who are both here, Kelly Brough and Joe Blake.
Okay. And there's been a motion for rehearing filed. I think that's Ms. Tierney.
Plus Mr. Dunn has his own motion.
Oh, and Mr. Dunn has his own motion. Okay. Why don't we hear from Ms. Tierney first, and then we'll hear from Mr. Dunn.
Thank you, members of the board. Madam Chair, Martha Tierney on behalf of the objectors. I'm just pulling my motion up. Excuse me one second. The objectors, Martel Daniels and Randy Meek. And the title board set a title for initiative number 98 on March 2nd, and the measure has more than a single subject, so we urge the title board to reconsider that title setting. And I liken this title to a title that the board set last year in the case that was decided by the Supreme Court in Hayes versus Spalding. And in that case, the Supreme Court talked about how you cannot broaden, you cannot step back far enough from a measure to cure a single subject problem by creating an umbrella title. And if you look at the petitioners, the proponents' motion for rehearing, you'll see that what they view the single subject of this initiative is as an open primary initiative, that this initiative allows unaffiliated voters to vote in primary elections. And if you look at all of the declarations, that's what all of the declarations are about. Their title of the initiative is all about primary elections. What the title board did was step back from that and set a title that says the measure is about the process of selecting candidates representing major political parties on general election ballot. And I know why the title board did that, because the measure contains two distinct subjects. And by trying to step back, you can try to get those both under one umbrella. But I don't think that's what the Supreme Court in Hayes versus Spalding made clear that you can do. You cannot do that. And what the two subjects in the measure are opening the major political parties' primaries to unaffiliated voters, and completely separate subject, allowing political parties to decide to nominate all of their candidates by assembly or convention and cancel all primaries. The way the measure reads, this is classic log rolling, although it isn't intended maybe as log rolling. The proponents admit in their at the first title board hearing that the only reason that the provision is in there that would allow political parties to cancel their primaries and nominate all of their candidates by caucus or assembly is because because the Supreme Court has required it. There's a seminal United States Supreme Court case, Colorado Democratic Party versus Jones, where Scalia made very clear that you cannot have an open primary where you don't have give the political party an option to opt out of that. And so, as proponents' counsel indicated, the only reason that's in this measure is to save it from being unconstitutional once passed by the voters. But that's a classic case of log rolling, in effect, because what they're talking about, what the whole measure is about, all the declarations, the title they propose is all about opening the primary to unaffiliated voters. And so the voters are going to come to the ballot and to petition signing and not know that what in fact they might be doing is allowing political parties to cancel all primaries. And so it will have the exact opposite effect than what the measure purports to be doing. So in this case, I think that this broadening the title as the title board did will not save this measure from a single subject violation.
But in some of those other cases, it's always been because the two things are not necessarily connected. So when we talked about, you know, recalling officials and then recalling appointees, you didn't really have to do those two things. You could do one or you could do the other. But in a case like this, where admittedly you can't have the one without the other, aren't they necessarily connected? I mean, how would you do this measure?
Well, I have sympathy for that argument, Madam Chair, but I'd like to repeal Tabor tomorrow. But I can't do that under a single subject. And just because a matter can't be done under a single subject doesn't mean that it's not that it's permissible to combine them together as one subject. I mean, here, these are very different subjects. Opening primary elections to unaffiliated voters and allowing political parties, independent from any voter, to nominate all of their candidates by caucus or assembly.
Convention. But you could repeal, the requirement in Tabor to increase, to have a vote on the increase of taxes without repealing all of Tabor. or having to necessarily repeal all of Tabor. You could then have a petition to repeal the calculation of the base. I mean, you could do those two things separately, and one doesn't necessarily have to include the other. It just seems in an initiative where you can't have one without the other. A Tabor repeal, you could repeal one part without the other and not have an issue there. It just seems to me that there's no way to do this initiative. And I don't know, I mean, if they did two initiatives and they did one to change that, and then they did one to, you know, to have an open primary, and then they did another initiative to have it all selected by assembly, the one that had the open primary would be not constitutional.
Well, if you did the other one first, Madam Chair, it would be.
I just think that there's a difference when they're not necessarily connected and when they are. And I don't necessarily think they're two subjects in any event, but if they were, I think that issue of whether something is necessarily connected to the other comes into play. So,
but it's only, it's only connected because the Supreme Court has said in this type of a situation, you must have that safety valve. They're not connected because they're the same topic. They're not the same subject. The Supreme Court has just said the right of association under the First Amendment demands that you have that safety valve. It doesn't mean that open primary is the same as canceling and nominating all candidates by assembly or caucus.
Do you agree that the provision, if it passed, would be unconstitutional under, I think you said Colorado Democratic Party.
It's not
maybe
Colorado.
California.
Democratic Party versus Jones. Do you agree that the provision would be unconstitutional under that case if it did not have this provision, opt-out or whatever you want to call it?
I think there would be a colorable challenge.
That's not quite the same thing. So are you saying you're not sure whether it would be constitutional or not, or you think it'd be just you think it'd be subject to that argument?
Well, I can't say. I would make the argument that it's unconstitutional. I can't say that I would win that argument, but I would try.
To me that seems significant that you know, this safety valve or opt-out provision is something that's required under the, you know, federal constitution and the United States Supreme Court precedent. And to me, my inclination is to say that including a required provision does not necessarily violate the single subject rule.
I obviously lost on the next one where I thought that, the presidential was part of it. I mean, I still believe that the single subject is, you know, relates to the nomination of candidates and that there can be different ways to nominate them within the same question. So I'm not necessarily saying that it's a single subject only because it's connected. I think it's a single subject. And even if there's an issue about it being two subjects, I think it's necessarily connected to the first. But we should probably hear from, unless you have questions,
no.
We should probably hear from Mr. Dunn before we...
Good morning, Jason Dunn on behalf of the proponents. So based on the comments, I don't want to belabor the issue, but I think the legal connectivity is a good point and a valid one, and for all the reasons that were already stated. But as you all know, the Supreme Court case law in Colorado on single subject also talks about two provisions of a member having not only a necessary connection but being properly connected. And in this case, the question is, do they work together to effectuate the purpose of the measure? So it's not just a function of this is a opt-out from the existing system we have in Colorado. The point is to say, in Colorado, we're going to switch to a default system where unaffiliated voters can vote in major primary elections. And if the parties don't like that, they can opt out. So one is properly connected to the other because we are switching to that system. So it effectuates a system where the parties not just have an opt-out from the current system, but have an opt-out from the new system for obvious reasons that they may not want unaffiliated voters voting in their primaries.
Anyone have any questions? All right. Any discussion on single subject?
I still think the measure has a single subject, the single subject that we set, not necessarily the one that Mr. Dunn advocates, but with the single subject that we did set, I do believe that there's a necessary connection between these two provisions that we're discussing as it relates to the process of selecting candidates. Okay. So.
All right, then I think we can move to the question itself. And we, again, on that one, we have dueling motions for rehearing. Let's take Ms. Tierney's first, because it has a few more in it than Mr. Dunn's. And so we'll wrap up Mr. Dunn's in the same discussion.
Thank you, members of the title board. Madam Chair, Martha Tierney on behalf of the objectors, Martel Daniels and Brandy Meek. The title board's title is misleading because there are some other key provisions that are substantial changes in current law that are not contained within the title, and so voters reading that title and petition signers reading that title will not know that there are some other fairly substantial changes. And those changes include that minor parties are exempted from this new open primary measure and won't have the opportunity to cancel their nominating conventions in the same way. Secondly, that this measure creates a new kind of super ballot for unaffiliated voters, that where they will receive a ballot that contains all candidates for all primary races, and that the measure also contains a provision that if a super ballot is not practicable for a county, that unaffiliated voters will receive separate primary ballots for all major political parties and be instructed to return just one of those ballots. All three of those are fairly substantial pieces of this measure, and reading the title as drafted, a voter will not know that they are contained therein.
I'm going to start with, since you only have three, let's start with A. We had a discussion about this last time about the minor political parties. And it seemed that there was not a really a change to existing law. Minor political parties will continue to operate the way that they already have. The changes to the major political parties. Do you disagree with that?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but the way the measure reads, I think that voters are going to be surprised. If you look at the declarations, they're all about opening primaries to unaffiliated voters. And so I think this is a classic example of voter surprise and voters being misled if they aren't advised that this doesn't open those races.
And you don't think that's covered by the single subject of major political parties on a general election ballot?
I think it could be clearer.
Mr. Dunn, do you want to respond to that at all?
I call this title board aerobics, where you're up, down, up, down. Jason Dunn, on behalf of the proponents. Sure. So obviously the purpose of drafting the title is to provide voters with the information about what the major purposes of the measure are, or the major purpose of the measure. And in the case of the impact on minor parties, from a practical standpoint, it will not be a change in the way minor parties conduct their elections currently. I went back and looked over the last, I think, three or four cycles to see whether there were any minor party primary elections. And I found only one. I think there was a Libertarian candidate primary in the 3rd Congressional in, I believe, 2010, maybe 2012. That was the only race where minor parties went to, any of the minor parties went to a primary election. So the question really is, and as an aside, you know, less than 1% of registered voters are registered with a minor party. So the question really is this a major component of the measure that warrants being included in the title, when you balance that against the interest of making sure the title has clarity for voters so that they understand the major import of the measure?
Anyone on the board have any questions for either?
I have a question. Mr. Dunn, because of Ms. Tierney's arguments, made me go back to read your measure. And if you could just walk me through a couple of things just so that I can understand the significance of the terminology that you used. And so when we're looking at Section 5, which is sort of the opt-out provision, it talks about a political party. And so under the election code, my understanding is a political party means a major political party or a minor political party. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
So under the opt-out provision, even a minor political party could choose, instead of having a primary, if they meet the requirements of the vote and all, could choose to select their candidates by assembly or convention. Is that correct?
Well, now as I'm thinking about that, I'm not sure that is correct. I would have to go back and look, but I believe until you get to 1/4-1300s, which is the minor party section of the code, the political parties are referring to major political parties, but I would have to look back at the statute. Ms. Tierney's looking up the definition as we speak.
Okay. All right. Well, while she's looking, can right. I continue my
sure.
progression? Okay. So right now, it would seem, perhaps, that under Section 5, both minor and major might qualify for the opt-out. And then you have the Section 7 provision, which we're talking about now in terms of for the minor political parties, if consistent with their constitution bylaws, they can just choose not to allow unaffiliated voters to participate in their primary if they have one, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So then going back to Section 3 of your measure, which is the provision pretty much establishing the ability of unaffiliated voters to vote and how that happens in terms of a single combined ballot, I get confused because the first, you know, subsection 2 first starts talking about a political party, and then as we get more into the ballots, the combined ballot, then it's about a major political party. And so for example, if there was a primary for a minor political party, how would an unaffiliated voter get a ballot to vote in that primary? Because right now, it just seems to be focusing on major political party. I'm just confused.
The Deputy Secretary can probably answer that better than I can, but I believe that if they do elect to use the primary method, right, then the provisions regarding primary elections and the distribution of ballots, if that's your question, would then apply.
Okay, but it just seems like for the unaffiliated, in terms of this ballot, either the combined ballot or a bunch of different ballots, because it's not practicable to do a combined ballot, is only related to the major political parties. Am I reading your measure correctly?
So the default in the measure is that for the major political parties, unaffiliated voters will have the right to participate in those elections.
Okay.
Minor political parties who have to choose whether they have to affirmatively choose whether they want to use the primary method, and typically don't, then if they do select the primary method, then these provisions would apply. And that's just why they reference political parties.
Okay. I'll take your assurance because I don't know election law that well. I'm just confused in terms of the difference, the difference in the terms being used in terms of just a political party, a minor political party versus a major political party. I understand that in most instances, we're just dealing with probably major political parties, but I just wanted to clarify that in terms of whether there's another provision of law that your measure isn't touching that would govern in terms of the unaffiliated being able to vote to ask for a primary ballot for a minor political party, if that's what the unaffiliated voter wanted to do or not. Because I don't know that it fits under the combined or the multiple ballot provisions,
right?
Because that's limited to major political parties.
Yeah, they would not be able to request a ballot
for a minor?
For a minor. An unaffiliated wouldn't. I mean, a minor party could have a primary, but an unaffiliated, this would only apply to.
So is it, okay. And that's because in terms of how we set the title, so is it fair to say that only under your measure, only the unaffiliated voters would only get to participate in major political party primaries?
That's how I read it.
Yeah.
I think that's
correct. If certainly the minor political party can elect to allow unaffiliated voters, or stated more correctly, choose not to allow them to participate.
Well, I'm not even sure they could allow them to participate, could they? I mean, the way this reads, it only applies to the major parties. So I don't think a minor political party could hold a primary and direct the clerk to send all their ballots to unaffiliated members. I mean, that would be a problem because they would already be getting the ballot for the major parties, and then they'd be adding this other.
I don't think they can even pick. The minor, yeah, someone would have to affiliate with the with the minor political party.
Right.
Okay, so then going back to this provision that's in Section 7 about a minor political party prohibiting unaffiliated electors, I mean, does that really have any force and effect if unaffiliated electors can't vote in a minor political party primary?
Yeah, I don't think the provision really has any additional effect from what is already in law.
Which would be that they have to affiliate
right.
with a minor political party in order to vote in
the primary. Thinking that through, I think that's
yes.
correct. And then was there clarification on the use of the term political party in Section 5 in terms of the assembly or convention opt-out provision?
I'm sorry, say that again.
So does the opt-out provision apply to both major political parties and minor political parties because of the use of the term political party as that's defined in the election code? And I don't know if Ms. Tierney.
Yeah, so the definition includes both.
It includes both. Okay, thank you. I just needed my lesson in election law for today. Sorry.
It's helpful for me to think that through as well.
Ms. Tierney, do you have anything you want to?
Do you want me, while I'm up here, do you want me to address the other?
I was just going to stick to this. Yeah, I was going to just stick to this issue so
okay.
we don't get too lost.
Thank you, members of the title board. Martha Tierney. So in response to your question, Ms. Eubanks, in 111.04.25, which is the definition section of
the election code.
The election code. Political party means either a major political party or a minor political party. Okay. So your questions do highlight then that Section 5 does allow for minor political parties to also cancel their primaries should they decide to do that, because the language is written
using just the term political party. I also wanted to just point to recent history when we had a minor political party play a major role in a gubernatorial election. And so there would be, while there may not be a lot of affiliated members of minor political parties, it is the case that there have been situations where those minor political parties have received a majority of, maybe not a majority, a substantial portion of the vote. And so it is the case, I think, that voters would like to know whether this measure, how this measure would apply to minor political parties in addition to major political parties. If Section 5 clearly applies to minor political parties, I also read Section 3 to apply to both, because Ms. Eubank's questions highlight that the first portions, first sentences in 14101 in Section 2 state that all political parties that are entitled to participate in the primary shall have their candidates placed on a single combined ballot to be used by unaffiliated electors. So why, if the minor political party was having a primary, like the Libertarians did in CD3 in 2010, would also have to be included on that super ballot, would they not? And ballots for whatever races there would be in a minor political party primary would also have to be included if it was not practicable for a county to use a single combined ballot.
I'm just looking at 14-1304 and the nomination of candidates in minor parties. I mean, the changes that you make that are made in 14101 primary elections when nominations, those only mention the major political parties, right?
They use the term political party, which is defined in the code as both. So they use the term political party and they use the term major political party.
Subsection 1 of that 14101 isn't being changed, and it says I guess it refers back to minor parties. It says only a major, except as provided in 14-1304, only a major political party is entitled to nominate candidates in a primary election. Okay.
But this change then will be a change to two, which will suggest otherwise.
Not necessarily. I mean, and just speaking from a draftish perspective, I mean, the reference in two in terms of a political party, it says each political party that is entitled to participate in the primary election, and if sub one controls in terms of its only major political parties that are entitled to participate in primaries unless 1. The other provision 5. Of the minor, then, I mean, it may not be a totally inconsistent use of the term, yeah. Although I agree.
Agreed, except that if they do select to have a primary per 1.4.13, et cetera, then...
And they're in, also then they're entitled.
In. Yeah.
But then if a minor political party has chosen to exercise their right to hold a primary pursuant to the provision in Part 13, then they could choose again to opt out and choose to do an assembly or convention.
They could, or they could choose to have their, under this, they could choose to have their candidates on the super ballot.
Well, I guess we're still back to the question of whether the things happening in a minor party are central to the measure. Because that's the first question.
Well, perhaps in light of our discussion in terms of sort of the possibilities of minor political parties versus major, that perhaps if some language is changed in the title that we set in terms of some references to major political party,
right.
That may, I think, include both at least some of the issue in terms of whether minor political parties need to be referenced. I mean, if you have a broad reference to political parties, then that would include both major and minor. Whereas right now in the title, we talked about selecting candidates representing major political parties. I'm not sure that that perhaps is an accurate statement.
Right. I think we have to
take that out, and maybe in the next on line three, also to take out the word major. Because I do think right now the language describing the opt-out provision is accurate because it applies to both minor and major. And I think at this point, in terms of the fact that a minor can choose by its bylaw, you know, consistent with its bylaws to exclude unaffiliated voters, I don't know that I see that as a major feature in terms of going to that much detail.
Right.
But that's just sort of my thinking right now. I'm open to other ideas or suggestions.
Well, I think since we probably aren't going to solve those legal issues, we need to, and it's probably not appropriate for the board to try to decide how a court's going to interpret all of these,
right,
you know, provisions, that we're probably better off, I think, going with your method, which is to be broad in our statement of political party, and then, you know, people can go back and read the measure themselves. And
can I ask one point of clarification? It sounds like we've moved on to the title.
Yes.
So.
Well, just as a potential, in terms of dealing with this issue about minor political
right.
parties
right.
That Ms. Tierney raised,
right.
That this is a way that
But yes, we moved past jurisdiction,
right.
if that was your
we
question.
We like that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Usually in a rehearing, we don't, unless Jason's here. He likes to make motions about jurisdiction a second
great.
Time, but
okay.
Yeah.
So we'd remove the word major in line two. Is that right?
I would think that would make the title more accurate based on the discussion we've had.
Yeah, I agree.
And also on line three.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm not inclined to include language regarding the ability of a minor political party to choose just to exclude unaffiliated voters at this point.
Yeah, I'm not either, because I think that is covered when we talk about political parties being able to select by assembly. It's essentially the same process.
Well, no, I think that provision allows them still to have a primary, but they can choose not to allow unaffiliated voters to vote in that primary.
Right.
As rare as that may be,
okay.
I think that provision is different than choosing not to use a primary at all and going
right.
to assembly or convention as their selection method. But I still don't think that that's a major.
Yeah, I don't think it is either.
Feature.
Okay. Anything else on the first one or move to? Since you're up here, Mr. Dunn, why don't we talk about your issue?
Sure. So just to finish the thought on the inclusion in the title of the combined ballot or separate ballots. Obviously, that's a technical issue in the process of distributing ballots and how voters receive those ballots, and is not something I think that needs to be included in the title. I don't think I need to belabor it any more than that. But the real issue, I think, on the title is the inclusion of the opt-out. And I was really thinking about, since our hearing, you know, what the purpose of the title is, and it, from the point of view of voters. And the thought occurred to me that the purpose of the title is not really to summarize the complete measure, and nor is it to educate the voters about what's in the measure. The idea of the title is to be just that, a title, so that voters know when they see that what the major provision of that measure is, which measure they're voting on, and it's not intended to supplant the necessity for voters to actually read the measure and to understand what the measure is about. And so I think it's in that vein, if we look at the opt-out provision, you know, what is the major purpose of this measure? Why is this measure being proposed? And that's to change Colorado to a default system as a semi-open primary, to allow unaffiliated voters to vote in the primaries of the major political parties. And that's what the voters fundamentally need to know, that this is, that's the measure that's on their ballot, and that's the one that they need to go read the blue book or go read the measure and understand more fully. And if you include the opt-out provision, it really, if you look at this in a vacuum, runs the real risk of creating the perception that Colorado is now an either-or state. Either you can allow unaffiliated voters to vote in the primary, or they can opt out and not. And they sort of have to choose one or the other, and they might choose one or the other. And while technically they can certainly choose to opt out if they meet the, you know, criteria that are outlined in the measure, it's important that voters understand that the default system will be the semi-open primary method of voting, and that's really how the vast majority of elections will be conducted under this system if it's adopted. And so inclusion of the opt-out really, I think, only serves to confuse voters as to how this system will work going forward. And therefore, we would argue, as we outlined in our motion, that it really be simplified to not include that provision. The other thing is, I was encouraged by the board's willingness over the last few hearings, and maybe even before that, to simplify the single subject clause and the in connection therewith provision clause. And so we would recommend striking the single subject clause altogether, and as we outline in our measure, sort of in red line format, a much more simplified version of the description to both make that change as well as to take out the opt-out provision.
Ms. Tierney, you want to be heard on the...
These things are good.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the title board. Martha Tierney on behalf of the objectors. The suggestion that taking out the opt-out makes the measure clearer, I think, belies the Supreme Court's guidance on the purpose of the single subject rule and the clear title rule. You don't want to have voters surprised. And while I appreciate that Mr. Dunn thinks that this will never happen, I think it will happen more because political parties will want to protect their nomination process. And so to suggest that because the threshold is high and that it will never happen means you don't have to tell the voters that it is in the measure, I think is contrary to all of the guidance that we have from the Supreme Court and our statute. So without the opt-out, I think it's clearly misleading, and I think the Supreme Court would agree.
Okay, any questions? Yeah, I agree. I think the opt-out has to be in there. It's a pretty short title. I don't have a problem with taking out the in connection therewith if other board members want to do that. On the combined ballot, I think that's administrative. I'm not inclined to put the layout of the ballot in the title or the process by which people are going to get to the polls. I mean, whether it's a super ballot or whether it's a two separate ballots, I don't think that's central to the measure. No one else?
I'm inclined to leave it as is. The one thing I was thinking is if there's a concern about, you know, specific circumstances not being clear enough, we could put in the actual, you know, 75% vote of the central committee or language along those lines if there's concern that, you know, specific is misleading one way or the other. I'm not set on that, and I, you know, nobody's, neither Mr. Dunn nor Ms. Tierney has suggested anything like that. That was my only other thought.
I'm just not sure anybody knows what the state central committee is or really.
And my feeling in terms of whether the title needs to include provisions describing the combined ballot, I agree that's procedural. That kind of detail, I don't think that's central to the measure. In terms of Mr. Dunn's suggested change, I think we talked about that before, that I'm still not comfortable in saying that the single subject is regarding primaries because of the opt-out provision. I'm comfortable with the title as it's drafted, and because you've got the two different features, I'm not comfortable taking out the in connection therewith. I'm fine with the format of the title as it's currently written.
Do you want to make a motion?
Okay, actually, I think we'll do a couple of, since we've got two motions for rehearing. Yeah. So first, in terms of the motion for rehearing on that was filed by the proponents of proposed initiative 2015-2016 number 98, I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing in all aspects.
Sorry, one other thing. I noticed that Mr. Dunn had in here changing from elector to voters, and taking out one of the, you know, political in political party. I don't know that we've discussed that, or if how strongly you feel about that.
Yeah, I was just going to jump up and say that.
Let me withdraw my motion then first.
Okay. I do think those are obviously very minor cleanup points, but I think, you know, voters think of voters as voters, not electors, right? So I think it helps them understand who it's applying to.
But when it says an elector, to vote. I mean, to say a voter to vote seems a little duplicative. I think it, you know, elector is the terminology that the measure uses. I think with the other language about an elector to vote in the primary election, it's pretty obvious to folks what an elector is. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be inclined to change that term.
One other suggestion might be to say allowing unaffiliated voters to participate in the primary election.
I don't know if people know that participate means vote.
Right. I think vote's clear. Yeah. So are we back? Should I make a motion again? Or you want to...
So the other one is on line four, taking out political before party.
First or the second one?
That first one there. I just noticed it was It was removed in the red line.
I suppose if it was going to be that one, it should be the next one as well. That was more just wordsmithing it and trying to take out unnecessary words when I think it references political party in the line above, and everyone would know that you're referring to a political party when you say party.
I don't know that I'm adverse in terms of making the change as right now as it's reflected on the screen on line four. I think the second reference, because that's the second clause in term, I think it's important to have political party there. I wouldn't be inclined to remove the reference to political in that aspect, but I'm fine with the change on line four if you want to pursue that.
Yeah, it's I think it's fine either way. I think it's fine with the red lines as on the screen right now.
Okay.
And do you want to change your motion?
Then I will change my motion. Okay. In regard to the motion for rehearing filed by the proponents on proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 98, I move that we deny the motion for rehearing in all respects except for the removal of the word political before party, the first reference on line four of the title as it's reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then in terms of the motion for rehearing filed by the opponents for proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 98, I would move that we deny the motion for rehearing in all respects except for removing the references to major on lines 2 and 3 of the title as it's reflected on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. That takes us to agenda item 2015-2016, number 99, primary elections. This is a motion for rehearing filed by Mr. Dunn. Go ahead.
For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of the proponents. So at the last title board meeting, as you all know, the board found by a 2-1 vote that inclusion of the presidential primary in the measure constituted a second subject. And as I thought about that, again, as I said on measure 98, I thought about it from the perspective of the voter and following the case law of the Supreme Court about when does something cross that line into being a second subject. And I think for purposes of the single subject analysis, the presidential race is really no different than any other race. As I said, I was looking through some of the results on the Secretary of State's website over the last few cycles, and I noticed that when it's talking about the presidential race, it refers, of course, to the candidates themselves. It doesn't say who those electors are, or it doesn't say, are you voting for the Republican electors or Democrat electors? It says who the presidential candidates are. And that's how voters think of what they're doing in a primary in the presidential race. And as you all know, the measure includes a list of races, of course, at all levels, and says that the open primary method will be applicable to all those races, but not limited to those races. So really what this is doing from the voter's perspective is saying, look, in primary elections in Colorado, it doesn't matter what races we're talking about, as long as they're partisan races. Those races are going to be decided through this semi-open primary process, and we're going to include in that the presidential primary. And so from the voter's perspective, those are certainly connected. I think the fact that it, as I said, that it's a process of selecting delegates to the national conventions is really irrelevant for purposes of a single subject analysis. It's about voting, and it's about who gets to do it in the primary elections, period. Two examples. So now this could backfire on me if you later vote that these are single subjects, but two that are probably on the top of your minds, I think they're actually being heard today. The measure regarding beer and wine sales in grocery stores. Currently, as you all know, grocery stores can include or currently have beer sales at lower alcohol levels. And this measure will not only allow those grocery stores to sell full strength beer, but it's adding wine to that, as I understand the measures. Now, certainly those aren't, one is not required by the other. You could certainly have one or the other. You could have two separate measures for those. But the point of that measure is to say, what are we going to allow, what type of alcohol are we going to allow to be sold in grocery stores? And it's the same thing here. It's how are we going to allow people to vote in primary elections? And to say that presidential races included is similar to saying we're going to include wine in grocery store sales. The other one that I think is up right after this, the change to the reapportionment and the redistricting method of drawing our political boundaries. You could, of course, have those separate and say that how we draw state legislative lines is different than how we draw our congressional boundaries. But the point there is that the single subject of that measure, in my view at least, is how we draw our political boundaries for purposes of voting. So it's really the same thing here. The presidential primary is just another primary. It's no different than the CU Regents race when you talk about when the subject of the matter is who gets to vote in our primaries. So we would argue they constitute a single subject and that you can go forward with setting a title.
Anyone have any? Oh, did you file on this?
I did not file, but I signed it.
Oh, okay. Anyone have any questions for the proponent?
I think I will. I'd be interested in hearing from Ms. Tierney.
So has anybody signed up to testify on this? Oh, Ms. Tierney, you have. Go ahead.
Is that, you know, I was thinking about that just as a point of order. I'm not going to object too strenuously, but is that proper for public comment when on a motion on a rehearing?
Well, we take public comment on any... On motions for rehearing, too, in addition to when the initial title is set. So, you know, if we change our minds, I suppose she could then file for another rehearing. So,
well, that's an interesting point, because I don't think I can.
Really?
No.
Oh. Okay.
So that's why I think you have to allow testimony here, because I couldn't file a motion for rehearing because I won. In theory, right? So the only way, I think the jurisdictional requirement to file a petition with the Supreme Court is that you have to participate in the rehearing.
Okay.
So here I am,
right,
participating in the rehearing.
Okay.
So Martha Tierney, on behalf of objectors, Mart Hill Daniels and Brandy Meek. And the title board was correct when it failed to set a title for this measure, because it clearly does contain two subjects. Not only does it, not only do presidential primaries elect or select
candidates differently than the rest of our primaries in the state of Colorado. But what this measure is doing is recreating a presidential primary in the state, which we do not have now. So it is creating a primary, and it is setting guidance about who can vote in all primaries in Colorado. Clearly two separate subjects. The analogy to the other measures, I think, is inapposite, particularly the beer and wine measure, because wine is already sold in Colorado. It's not. It's just talking about where it can be sold now. There is no presidential primary in Colorado, and this is creating one in addition to creating all of the things that measure number 98 did, which about regarding how unaffiliated voters may participate and how minor political parties are going to tackle their races, and allowing all political parties to cancel primaries and select candidates by caucus or assembly.
Questions for either from the board?
I have some questions for.
Oh, we have another person who wants to speak. All right, go ahead. Okay.
Robert Chase for the Colorado Coalition for Patients and Caregivers. Briefly, the reason why this violates the single subject rule is the clear references to different terms that have statutory definition: major political party and minor political party. This is the same defect that was in Measure 98 until you removed the word major. You are making changes to different provisions of law, and the clearest indication of that is the references to terms which have statutory definition, different ones. Thank you. Any questions?
I have one. So let's say we decided to change the date of election, and we were going to have our elections on, when somebody brought an initiative to the board and said, we're going to move our elections to the second Tuesday or something. Could we never change any type of election law because it would necessarily have implications for federal elections and state elections?
Oh, not at all. We're talking about terms which have definition under state statute, distinct ones. That's what I've just said, and that's what I'm referring to. I'm not making vague references to federal law versus other laws. I'm saying that you can modify specific provisions of law one at a time. When you make reference to a major political party, you're referring to one provision of Colorado law, or rather several, which concern major political parties. When you make reference to minor political parties, you're referring to different provisions of Colorado law.
Well, what if you just changed minor political parties? You would still have a reference to a primary election, which is defined. You would still have a reference to a voting, which is defined. You would have a reference to unaffiliated, which is defined. I mean, you're always going to have references in any question to a multiple number of definitions, aren't you?
These definitions are distinctions drawn in statute for the purpose of making different laws. They wouldn't be different definitions if they referred to the same thing. The purpose of the definition is to distinguish them as separate subjects. And here we have clearly two different subjects.
I don't have anything else. Any other questions?
I have some questions for Mr. Dunn.
Okay.
So I went back and listened to the initial hearing a couple of weeks ago, and I think with respect to Initiative 99, we didn't give you the opportunity to say what you believe to be the single subject for this measure. And I'm interested in hearing how you would describe that for this measure.
Sure, I think that's a great question. And I know Ms. Eubanks and I think had some back and forth on sort of what I'm not sure I really see a distinction between saying the single subject is primary elections or saying it's the process by which we nominate or select candidates for the general election ballot. I think the point here is that for purposes of 99, it's saying it's how we conduct the primary elections in terms of who can vote in them. And it's merely saying that the presidential primary or the presidential election can be one of those races that's included.
What briefly is the would the effect be? Just I want to make sure I understand what the effect of the presidential primary section is. Could you just briefly describe what does it do?
Sure. So all it would do is say that Colorado shall have a presidential primary in Colorado, and that it shall be conducted within a certain time frame. And I actually, if we get to the title, I think that's an important provision, because one of the reasons I think we got rid of the presidential primary in Colorado is because it was so late in the process that people felt like Colorado was not having a voice in that process. And so this would require that it be in a small window much earlier in the year. So essentially, it would allow us to have a primary, presidential primary in Colorado, and unaffiliated voters would be, by default, allowed to vote in that process.
And what would be the effect on the caucus system?
There would be no effect other than that there wouldn't be a vote on the presidential race. Maybe a straw poll or something like that, but there would not be an actual vote that would bind delegates to the convention.
So obviously, you know, given Measure 98, you could allow the unaffiliated voters without establishing the presidential primary. Could you do it the other way, where you could have an initiative that just establishes a presidential primary without allowing unaffiliated voters to participate? It seems to me like you could.
Sure. But that's really never been the definition of the single subject rule. And that's the point I was trying to make earlier with regard to beer and wine sales or apportionment and redistricting, right? The definition of whether something or whether a measure constitutes two subjects is not could two provisions stand on their own and have some effect and meaning. It's really the other side of that coin. It's do they have some connection that makes sense, that's proper and necessary, and that the voters will understand is, okay, this is all about one thing, one subject. And in this case, that, of course, is how we get to vote in our primaries and on which races and who gets to vote.
And, along that same line, you could ask a question just if unaffiliateds could vote in federal elections.
Correct.
And then you could ask a question about whether unaffiliated voters can vote in county commissioner races.
Right. And that's the point I tried to make last time, I think. You know, the fact that I think if you're going to say that the presidential primary is a separate subject, then you have to say the CU Regents race is a separate subject, and the county commissioners is a separate subject, and the U.S. Senate is a separate subject. So in my view, it's sort of all or nothing. Either including any race and all races is one subject, or they're each separate subjects.
I think that would be true if there were already a presidential primary. You know, what concerns me is that there is not one, and so you're not just saying we're opening this up to all races, we're saying we're opening up to all the different kinds of primaries and races, and then creating one of those.
That's true. But I think the point from the voter's perspective is, what is this measure in its entirety doing? And it's saying in Colorado, we're going to have primary elections for all the partisan races, and we're going to allow unaffiliated as a default, as a matter of right, for voters to vote in those races. It's really that simple.
Does it matter at all to your argument that this is reinstating a presidential primary as opposed to, you know, if there had never been one?
From a constitutional standpoint, I don't think so.
Okay. I think those are all my questions for Mr. Dunn.
You have any?
No questions.
Anything for anybody else who's testified? I continue to believe what I believed last time, which is it's all part of a single subject. I think whether there's a primary now or not doesn't matter. That's an effect of the law. And this is, you know, the fact that we're electing delegates is the same argument we'd have in a presidential, where we would be electing to the college and not necessarily the direct election, which is, I think, a lot of the discussion we had last time. I still think that it's part of an election, and we shouldn't be parsing out whether it's presidential or Senate or county commissioner.
And I haven't changed my position, although I agree with Mr. Dunn in terms of you take a broad subject, whether it be primaries or even elections. I think the court has been very clear that you cannot use an overarching theme to make the argument that two unrelated, incongruous purposes fit within that theme. And I think that's what we're talking about here. I think a presidential primary, we're not just dealing with unaffiliated voters, and actually the measure doesn't do anything in terms of unaffiliated voters. It just says that they can participate to the extent as allowed by law. And so it's establishing a new primary, a presidential primary for all voters. And I think that's different than establishing the ability of unaffiliated voters to vote in primaries, selecting candidates for a general election. So I just don't think that there is that connection, that they're dependent on each other. I think they're exactly the types of provisions that the court was concerned about, that each proposal has to stand on its own merits. You can't put them together under a broad subject in order to put it before the voters. And so I haven't changed my mind. I don't believe it constitutes a single subject.
And in my mind, this is a close call. I've read a lot of Supreme Court cases over the past couple of days and could not find anything that seemed precisely on point. They use some general language that can be hard to apply in a specific case. It's significant to me, you know, some of the factors that are significant. I think it could be done in a separate initiative without doing any sort of violence to it. That's not dispositive, obviously, the fact that you could divide it up. It adds a significant new statutory part, and you know, there's a lot of text and provisions and subprovisions. Again, I don't think that's dispositive, the fact that there's a lot of it there. I think probably my biggest concern is that I think these are separate in that you could have voters who would support one and not the other, or vice versa. The cases talk about not combining unrelated subjects for the purpose of enlisting support from advocates for each one. And I was not persuaded by Mr. Dunn's response to that in the motion for rehearing, where he says there's no indication of that, and common sense dictates that it's highly unlikely. I'm just not sure that's the case. So again, although I think it's a close call, and I'm not sure that there's something, you know, precedent directly on point, I maintain my prior view that this is two different subjects with the addition of the presidential primary.
Can I make a motion?
Sure. I move that the motion for rehearing filed by the proponents for proposed initiative 2015-2016, number 99, be denied in all respects.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. So that passes 2-1, which takes us, can we take a 5-minute break, and then we'll do the Colorado Redistricting Commission.